So this is Talk Popsy. Popsy means Philosopher's Ontological Party Club. And it was created by Dina Schattenkirk, who is the lady
in Is she yellow. Scandinavian?
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
And my name is Martin Nietzsche. Yes. I'm the philosopher here in this tent for this evening.
Ah.
And the theme is art as cognition and cognition as art.
Huh.
And your name is?
Is Edward Leung.
My pleasure. So what would you like to talk about today?
Oh,
I mean, you may start maybe with presenting us your experience with art.
Oh, my experience of art.
What do you prefer and so on?
Well, I come from a family artist, but my older brother makes his living in fashion, doing design. And in school, he growing up, he would draw. So he dropped out of an Ivy League college to find his way in the world and ending up in the fashion business. But growing up, we would go to the same art classes in our grade school and middle school. So my connection to art maybe was following in his footsteps, not being as good an artist as him, but maybe drawing. Everyone back then enjoyed comic books, so we would do comic books.
Yeah.
But in the art class in middle school, we had teachers that taught us perspective, we had illustrations from Leonardo da Vinci that I remember copying. So that was my connection to art. And
maybe as a perceiver of art, as a
perceiver, I did take a Western art survey class that I enjoyed in college, but as a perceiver, I mean
music, you know, and you as someone who experiences art.
And when you mean art, do you also mean performing arts too?
Definitely.
Yeah, it was after a few years after college. Growing up in a working class immigrant household, you know, your parents are busy earning a living. So even though I live in New York City, born here, I wasn't exposed to like the theater. And it was a few years after college that I found out about a fringe theater festival in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, this is interesting. And I ended up going, and as a Star Trek fan, someone had a very, very low budget performance on the life of the creator of Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry, including his womanizing and his maybe underhanded treatment of his colleagues in creating the second Star Trek show. And as a fan of Star Trek, seeing that, I said, oh, they're never going to mount a multi-million-dollar production of this man's life, but to see a very low-budget production of someone I was interested in. I was very heartened, and I really enjoyed it. And I have gone to see off-Broadway shows since then, and I've gone to see Broadway shows. So I think I've come to really appreciate the live, the ephemeral live performance aspect of these shows in New York that maybe I didn't growing up, because it wasn't something that was taught to me.
And since we have this theme, art as cognition, how do these performances affect your thinking?
Oh.
Well, does it help you anyhow, or is it just relax?
You know, I don't think of the theatrical performances as affecting my cognition. I think of it as affecting maybe my more empathetic, I don't know, more, is it feminine, like more more relating to people and being in a space. Like, I think actors and actresses have said, there's something special about being in a room full of strangers, together. Receiving this performance which reflects human emotion and drama, and recognizing those dilemmas or empathizing with them. So I That's really interesting.
Yeah, actually, you know, empathy is also a way of thinking. Since cognition and thinking and philosophy is not only about notions and judgments and sentences and so on, but it's because I'm from Europe, so I'm rooted mostly in what is called the continental philosophy. And for the continental philosophy, the notion of empathy is one of the most important notions. I mean, if, as you said, if you are in a room full of strangers and you have to empathize with them, you have to be very clever and wise even, right? So it's a way of thinking, which is also philosophical, I would say. So if those performances help you to empathize with other people, they help you to think.
Though I will say, I did see a play about the Arab-Israeli negotiations, I think in the 1990s. And there, you're using your understanding of history, and I think one of the negotiators, I guess maybe studied Marxism in in Russia. So in the play, there are jokes about his being a Marxist, yeah, when you see that, then your brain is thinking of maybe stuff you learned about maybe the support of the PLO by the Soviet bloc, that kind of stuff, where you're thinking about history. But mostly I think you're cued into the emotions of the actors or what they're trying to say dramatically. There is cognitive, because I saw a musical about the LSD drug trips of a politician, Claire Booth Luce, an actor, Cary Grant, and somebody else. The famous British author of A Brave New World, Aldous Huxley. And it was they all took LSD, but it was a drama that they did it together. So I think the theme was that only together can we heal our maybe internal trauma, but it was I'm thinking about the drama, but also LSD, and what do I know about Cary Grant and Aldous Huxley? I mean, not a lot, but
it's also important, I think, feature of art, this widening of consciousness, as they call it. You may use LSD or other psychedelics, but you may also simply go to theater, which also somehow opens your mind, as they say, right?
I guess so.
What do you think about psychedelics? Actually,
About psychedelics. You know, I'm embarrassed. Like, I've never tried psychedelics.
And me neither, actually.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So I feel kind of square. Like, I've had friends who said, one of my siblings, he went to Europe, and when they were visiting Rome, he and his friend took mushrooms to look at the Sistine Chapel, which I guess would be fun. And I've heard about
Pope wouldn't love it. Maybe he would.
Having people having bad trips or wanting to have a guide. But I will say, I went to I enjoy comedy, so I've been to the Montreal Comedy Festival a couple of times, and the last trip before the pandemic in 2019, the Phi Center had virtual reality. It's a museum that had virtual reality, and one of them was profoundly affecting, was a virtual reality trip based on someone's experience on ayahuasca in, I guess, South America. And it was so powerful that they would have the chanting of the shaman after you take the drug, and you skip the part where I think people throw up when they take it, and it went into the psychedelics, and it was, you could see what that person saw, and it looked like someone was reliving being in a womb. It was pulsating walls of color and this chanting, and you were flowing in a river, and I had the my impression was that whoever animated the sequence for the virtual reality, based on the person who had the experience, that person's experience, to me, it seemed like he was maybe reliving going through his mother's birth canal. It was just that powerful.
Yeah.
So I think it is. I mean, I hear good things. I don't know. Was it on a Joe Rogan podcast? He was interviewing someone, and they were saying how therapeutic ayahuasca can be. So
yeah.
I think...
There's important difference between taking drugs as a sort of escape, as maybe recreation. Well, as they call it, recreation use of psychedelics. This is not a good way. As some artists or people from native cultures, they use psychedelics as a spiritual way, which is curated by shaman and so on. It's important feature of art, simply. Right. Also,
so I think what you're saying is there's maybe a poor use of psychedelics, maybe or a frivolity, or to escape from self-understanding, maybe, right? Is that? And then there's taking psychedelics to have a better understanding of the world, or your own issues, or your own traumas. I guess there's a virtue of taking psychedelics.
But I think art has the similar power, a similar impact on perceiver. So the experience of a performance, and it's interesting that you like comedies, right? It's the irony and the humor. It's a moving force, right? It's something which takes you, and how would you describe it?
I think a comedian might have said that you can't fake. I guess you could kind of fake laughter, but it comes from inside. So even if someone is saying something that is, right now we have, you know, the whole cancel culture. If they're saying something that is maybe controversial, but you laugh, that's an honest kind of reflection. And maybe it's that there's so much tension on the subject and it's controversial, and it's a release when they can make light of something. Or I think police or soldiers, they deal with very dark things in their duties. And so they have a very dark sense of humor, and I think maybe that's their release. But it's something similar where I think when you laugh, sometimes it's a release because someone has said something true, or it's an acknowledgement.
You would be surprised, maybe, that irony and humor is deeply rooted in philosophy. Philosophy is not only a serious business of thinking, but people like Socrates, or in 19th century, Kierkegaard, or many others in 20th century, they used irony to build thoughts. So irony as something subversive. People usually, when people start to think, they want to have deep thoughts and nice thoughts and
profound
and well, bring some ideas simply. And what Socrates did, he subverted those nice ideas with irony.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Moving people like closer to truth, actually.
Right.
And
for humor.
Yeah. And this is, I like this about art. When the author somehow blinks at you or gives the hint that don't be so serious. This is, I show you something here, but please don't make big thoughts from this. Make just the small thoughts, the thoughts that are for you. In this way, closer to truth.
Right. Yeah. Is that related to maybe, I think they used to say the court jester could say certain truths, that the court jester was allowed to maybe say certain things or make fun of the king.
I know.
Other subjects would be in trouble for the kind of the vehicle of comedy.
I mean, that sometimes, no, usually when people have to speak about art and their experience with art, they feel to be pressured to use big words like, well, it was great and it had a deep impact on me, and but in this way they avoid to really express the change that art causes with them, you know. So irony somehow helps. I was in a Whitney Museum yesterday at the Biennale, and I just felt like a great person that I'm there watching those great, sometimes complicated works of art. And then the irony moment came, and I said, no, you're not great for watching this. You're not great for being in New York. You're not great for being in this gallery. You have to experience the art and discover something simply. So I mean that irony and humor helps you to discover really the deepness of experience with the art. And this is what Socrates knew, and this is what Søren Kierkegaard in 19th century knew also. He was a great philosopher and a religious thinker, and he simply said, we can approach religion or God not by big thoughts, but by irony, simply.
By ironies. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Unexpected, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So this is what came to my mind when you spoke about your experience with performance.
Oh, yeah. No, that. Thank you. I didn't know that about Kierkegaard or Socrates, the use of irony.
Yeah,
it was definitely interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Would you like to say something to conclude?
Oh, well, no. Thanks for coming out here, I guess.
Thanks for sharing your experience. It's,
you know,
I think it showed us clearly what does it mean to think by experiencing art, simply.
And the interesting thing is, when you asked me to say something, my mind was racing because I wanted to say something profound. So there's, when you think of art, there's a certain amount of pretension that I want to be more philosophical, a better interpreter of art than I am. And I have a very Neanderthal caveman understanding of art, and I'm okay with it, you know.
So now we know about what the talk was, actually, about irony and profound thinking. And
Thank
you very much.
You got it. Yeah, it was a pleasure meeting you. Yeah.